Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth, here with, it's Mikey P. McCarthy again.
Once again.
Yeah, it's my lucky day. 2 weeks in a row. How are you today, my friend?
I'm doing very good. It's a nice, cool weather up here in the north.
Oh, it's pretty nice down here. So.
Low 70s, yeah.
No problems. Anyway, we're on an open show tonight, Michael, so that means that our listeners are our guests. They get to call in and direct the conversation tonight. 410-922-6680 is the way to do that. Saying, this is a topic that's very important to me. If you can answer a question for me about Social Security or Medicare, if you could answer a question for me about estate planning or income taxes or investments, or if you could answer a question for me about insurances or 401ks or IRAs or Roths or whatever the point is that has to do with your personal finances, we're here to answer it. We want to demonstrate what a true professional financial advisor should do, and that is be a doctor of personal finance, a general practitioner of finance, and help you guide you in any area that deals with your money and your money management, and be able to answer those questions and give you unbiased opinions as a fiduciary, making sure that you limit conflicts of interest and have sound reasoning as to why what you're saying is somebody's best interest. So that's what we try to do on this show. So if you want to call in and ask a question that's near and dear to your heart, that you say, if you answer this question, this would be very beneficial to me, you can call in at 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680 if you have a question that you want to ask. And Mikey, I was on... You don't mind I call you Mikey. I always ask that. You know, I call you Mickey, too, occasionally. Not
Mickey's
just Mikey.
Normal one, but I'll, you know, whatever. If you
Mickey,
say something with, in
Mikey,
my direction.
Something in your direction, you'll answer. Anyway, this morning I was on with Sean, and I was talking about the practical things that you ought to do during a bear market like we're in right now. Even though technically we haven't hit full bear market territory, because that's where the S&P 500 or the Dow is down for more than 20% at the end of the day. From its high, and this market actually technically hasn't hit that, but it is, you know, if you look underneath the surface, many stocks are 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70% down. So you know, in my opinion, this is a bear market, whether it technically hit 20% or not. A lot of practical things we can do, but you have a caller online, so we'll let you go to him.
All right, let's go to Rick in Lutherville. Rick, how can we help you?
Hey, gentlemen, thanks for taking the call. So when a person goes into retirement, should they withdraw from their Roth IRA first or a regular IRA, and why?
Well, every situation is unique. Right. So, you know, I can't tell you for sure how you should do it. But in general, we're going to be drawing from Roth IRAs absolutely last, except for in unique situations. So if I've got a client that's already hitting high tax situations, hitting situations where there's tax landmines in front of them, we might draw from the Roth just to avoid those. But we typically want our Roth money to be last that we draw from, because remember, the benefit of the Roth is the longer you hold it, the longer you get tax-free compounding of your money. So typically, we're going to want the Roth to be last, not first. And we're going to typically draw from traditional IRAs as long as we're not pushing your tax bracket up ridiculously high. And we're going to have to look at those situations on each individual scenario. But, you know, when you turn 72, you're forced to start taking money out of your IRA. So sometimes by taking the money out of the IRA when you're a little younger, before you turn 72, it just keeps that IRA balance down from growing bigger and bigger and bigger, so that when you do hit your required minimum distribution, you don't start hitting into a, you know, kind of a nuclear time tax bomb, you know, where you've accumulated so much tax deferred money that it all of a sudden explodes in your hands.
Yeah, and thinking about it a different way, you know, for the most part, you want to have as much growth as possible in the Roth side of your account because that's the side that's going to be tax free forever.
Right.
All right. So the question is now, when you're 72 and you have and you got the required minimal distribution, do you have to take it from both IRAs or you?
No. Roth. You never have to take a required minimum distribution from a Roth IRA.
Oh.
Never. That's another one of the reasons why we don't draw from the Roth IRA.
All right. So if a person only has a Roth IRA and he's 72, you're telling me they don't even have to take any money from that?
That's correct. It's absolutely correct. Yeah. It's one of the beauties of the Roth IRA, my friend.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for the information. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Great call.
Yep, and we're on an open show, so 410-922-6680. We'll be right back with more Money, Riches, and Wealth.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., doing what a personal financial advisor should do. Is your personal financial advisor your tax expert? Is your financial advisor able to guide your estate plan? Is your financial advisor able to help with college planning, retirement planning, mortgages, Medicare, Social Security, company benefits, or as a comprehensive advisor to business owners? Is your financial advisor independent from brokerage firms or insurance companies? Is your financial advisor unable to take commissions or referral fees in direct conflict of their professional relationship with you? Is your advisor a fiduciary working in your best interest? Despite the commissions and fees you pay, you're unable to answer one question yes. Do our financial physical and experience the difference. We are so confident that the financial physical is unconditionally guaranteed. To learn more, call 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here on an open show. So if you want to call in and ask a question, Mikey, you got anybody online or should
we
I just ramble
do.
On?
No, but we've got plenty more
plenty
time in the
time
show.
Plenty of time for me to ramble.
No, not plenty of time for you to ramble. Plenty of time for other people to call, 410-922-6680. But let's go right to our first caller. Stan on the Eastern Shore, you had a question?
Hi, yeah, I do. I'm 61 years old, single and no kids. And I should have my house paid off right around the time of retiring. And I'm just wondering what you think of as an additional source of retirement income doing a reverse mortgage.
Well, you know, I have a theory on reverse mortgages there, Stan. And here it is, okay? I never liked reverse mortgages until about 10 years ago. There was a change in the law that forced reverse mortgage companies to not charge exorbitant fees. I remember back in 2002, we had a client's father wanted to do a reverse mortgage out in California. And he got a $225,000 distribution from a reverse mortgage in California back in 2002. And the fees, you ready for this? The fees on that loan were $23,000. That were just the fees to establish that $250,000 loan. And then they were charging something like 8% interest on any amount outstanding on that loan. So, you know, I was always a big negative toward that because the fees and the cost. About 10 years ago, they changed the law. They can't charge ridiculous fees like that. They're still high, but they're not ridiculous like that was, okay? So it made it plausible. It didn't make it wonderful. It made it plausible. Now, here's the questions you have to ask yourself. Number one, do I want money? Most people will answer yes to that. Now, you got to answer yes to all four of these. Second one. Do I intend to stay in that house until the day I die? Okay? Well, you know, if you answer yes to that, that's a good indication that a reverse mortgage might work for you. Third one, do I not care what it costs to do this reverse mortgage. In other words, if they charge me 6.5-8% compounded interest, I'm not concerned. If they charge me $5,000-$6,000 to establish the loan, I'm not concerned, as long as I get cash at the end of the deal. Okay. And the last question you have to ask yourself is that the day that that house is liquidated, you don't care that there's going to be no equity left in that house. Whether, you know, like you said, you have no children, so you care less who it goes to. You know, and so if you don't care what equity is left in the house when you leave it, however you leave it, you know, and you can answer those other three questions, yes, that you're going to stay there until the day you die, et cetera, then it makes some sense for you, my friend.
Let me bear in there, too, because I actually have a very close family member that did a reverse mortgage, did it later when the fees were lower. But the problem that he's run into is that his house has stairs, and he's starting to have trouble with the stairs. So if the house isn't set up a certain way, it could be an issue. And then the last issue is that he ended up going through all of his assets, and he doesn't have that house to fall back on now. So instead of being able to float himself in a retirement home, you know, for a couple years and then get on Medicaid, he's got no options. He's basically can't leave that house. And I will also tell you that they will send people around to check on you. And if your house is starting to look decrepit, starting to look like maybe no one lives there anymore, maybe it looks like it's an abandoned house, they will from time to time attempt to seize the house, as they say no one's living in it, so the reverse mortgage is over, and then you have to prove that you live in it. So I had one person with a bad experience, but, you know, just putting that out there.
Yeah, well, that's part of the equation, that you don't care what's left in the value of the house when you leave the house, however you leave it. So that's what Mikey is talking about. So, you know, I've done reverse mortgages with three clients in 45 years of business. So, but they've all been done in the last 8 years.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I have some steep stairs, so that could be an issue.
Yeah,
right,
so,
well,
you know, right. another option, Stan, is to sell your house, buy a house that you really feel that you could live in for the rest of your life, and then do the reverse mortgage. That might be a very good option for you.
Yeah, gotcha.
All right?
All right.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Very good, buddy. Well, the board is lit up, but there's still plenty of show, 410-922-6680. But with that, let's go to Fred in the Eastern Shore. Fred, you had a question.
Yes, I got a question. Hey, you guys are great. I just listen to you every week. But I see these ads on TV about getting your mortgage. They want to see if somebody's getting into your title. They want title. They want you to pay a monthly fee, so they watch your title for you and tell you if anybody attempts to take your title. And they act like it's real easy to take your title and steal your house.
Well, okay, so let me address that, because I've addressed this before, and let's go through it. So there is possibility that it can happen. It's so remote, though, I'm not necessarily sure I would be overtly concerned, as the advertising people want to make it big, make it sound
okay,
big. So
you've satisfied me.
Well, wait a minute. Let me finish, okay? So, you know, it's very easy to make sure that would never happen to you. One is open your mail. If you open your mail, I wouldn't be too worried. If you live in the house and you open your mail, I definitely wouldn't be worried. this is a issue that has happened, but it is rare and remote, and they're turning it and exploiting it in many ways. There are also many real estate offices throughout the country where they will actually give you notifications if anybody's trying to do anything to your title or anything. They'll send you notifications. So you could always contact your local real estate government office and ask them, do you do any notifications for if anybody's trying to do anything? It's free.
You're saying if I open my mail, I would see announcements coming through that something's happening before it gets bad.
That's usually what they're talking about, is usually a house that's not being lived in very much, and it's a house that somebody is unattentive to their mail or their email or whatever way they're getting information about their
I got you. Thank you so much. You,
all right, buddy. Great call. Thank
sleep,
you, Jim.
I'm going to sleep good tonight. Thank you.
There you go.
You sleep good. I'm drinking wine right now, so I'll probably sleep good, too.
I know. Actually, it's because you don't have to drive home.
That's our, one of the beauties of this.
All right, know? We got about a minute left. We've got one caller on the line, but the rest of the show is open, so please, you know, consider calling in 410-922-6680. But let's try to at least start answering the question for Paul in Catonsville. Paul, how can we help you?
Yeah, I'd like to know about I bonds and like the rate of interest and how long you have to have them.
Okay, so
where to get them and are they safe? You know, stuff like that.
Well, the I-bonds are the safest bonds in the world because they're absolutely directly guaranteed by the United States government. So a bank account is FDIC insured. So FDIC is a quasi-government agency that has sort of a U.S. government implicit guarantee of the FDIC, but it's still not an implicit guarantee of the United States government, whereas an I-bond is a direct implicit guarantee of the United States government. So extremely safe. You don't have to worry about them, but you do have to go to treasurydirect.gov to buy them.
So we're going to put you on hold, and we'll be right back to you. Is that okay? Can you wait for us for the break?
Yeah, sure.
All right. We will be right back with more Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and I'm here with Michael P. We're answering Paul's question. And
Paul, we got you back on the line.
So sure. you cut me off, Mikey, and I forgot.
Here, I'll tell you. So we were at I-bonds. You were
I-bonds, right?
And you're telling them. We already told them where to buy them.
You have to buy them at Treasury Direct. So just do a Google search. If you don't know how to do that, get somebody to do it for you. TreasuryDirect.gov. You can only buy 10,000 per year per person. So if you're married, you and your spouse can each buy 10,000. The bonds pay a fixed interest rate, which is normally very low. It's like 0.25% right now. But at the end of each year or at the end of each 6 months, they adjust the bonds to the rate of inflation. So the inflation rate right now is like 8%. So at the end of 6 months, they're going to adjust your bond by like 4%. So you're going to get like 4.25% for the first 6 months of the bond. And then next quarter, if inflation is still relatively high, they're going to give you 0.25% plus the half of the rate of inflation for that 6 months also.
Yep,
so
6 months, right.
Yep, and that's how that works, my friend. And here's the thing. You have to hold the bond for 5 years if you don't want any penalty. If you do liquidate the bond in the first 5 years, they're going to take 6 months of whatever interest or inflation adjustment was given to you back. So in other words, if the last 6 months you got 4.5% and you cash the bonds in before the 5 years is up, they're going to take that 4.5% back from you.
And you can't liquidate in the first year.
Oh, and you can't liquidate. Don't forget that. Right, Mikey?
Yep.
you can or you can't?
Cannot. In the first year, once you've bought it, you got 12 months, you can't touch it.
But if you do cash it in after 12 months, you're going to get a six-month interest penalty.
Right. Okay.
And that's for the first 5 years. So you, at the end of 12 months, you can cash it in. But if you do, you're going to lose 6 months of interest. And you can hold it, if you hold it for 5 years, but before that 5 years is up, you cash it in, they're going to take 6 months of interest. If you hold it for full 5 years, you get whatever interest and inflation adjustments you made. So they're very good investments. You just have to think of it as a five-year investment.
And Drew, correct me if I'm wrong, but they stop paying interest at 10 years, right?
No, they stop paying interest at 30 years. Every 10 years, they adjust the fixed interest rate on the bonds. But the bonds go renew every 10 years. You're absolutely right. It's a 10-year renewal, but it keeps renewing for 30 total years.
All right.
All right, Paul?
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
Excellent.
Thanks, Paul, for the question.
Okay.
Anybody else, Mikey?
Oh, we certainly do. We're going to go to JP. JP, you got a question about treasuries?
Yes. What is it? I've never heard of it until just recently, and I'm retired, and I have some annuities, and I have an insurance policy that they take $170 out a month, and I'll end up with $150,000.
Okay. What's your question is, what are treasuries, I-bonds?
And what should I invest in those?
Those I-bonds.
I don't know anything about I-bonds, but okay. And where would I check on that? Online?
So if you wanted to, you know, the only treasuries worth talking about would be I-bonds, okay?
Okay.
And if you're going to look on I-bonds, you just do a Google search for I-bonds, and you can only buy them directly from the United States government on a place called Treasury Direct. But right now, they could theoretically yield like 8% over the next 12 months. They're going to clearly yield 4.25% for the first 6 months.
How come so much?
Well, because they're guaranteed to adjust for inflation every 6 months.
Oh,
and because
okay.
The inflation rate is 8% or so right now, the adjustment is going to be almost 4%. So that's why the bonds are going to yield that much. It's a quirk in how the bonds work, and it's a quirk in what the inflation rate is right now.
And it would look up U.S. Treasury Direct?
Just type in Google I-bonds, and it'll all come up. Treasury Direct.
Google I-bonds. Okay.
Treasury Direct is what it's going to lead you to, and it'll tell you exactly how to buy them. You got to buy them online through them, okay? And you can only buy 10,000 per year, so you can't just buy 50,000 or 100,000 of them. You can only buy 10,000 per year, okay?
Very well. And do they send you any notifications from time to time?
Well, you got a whole account with the United States Treasury, so yeah, they're going to send you lots of, probably more than you'd ever want, JP.
You're probably right. Thank you very much.
All right.
Good. Good question.
All right. So we got an open show. There's plenty of room on our caller board, 410-922-6680. That's 410-922-6680. So we can answer your question. But let's go right to Earl in Northwest Baltimore.
Yes. Hi, Drew. I have a question. You were talking about the Roth IRA before, and you said that the best thing is that you never have to pay taxes on it, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Let's say you have $10,000 that you pay taxes on already, which you've paid taxes on. Can you put that in the Roth IRA? Is that allowable?
So every year, Earl, if you have earned income means you work or you have a business that you're getting self-employment income from, and you can put $7,000 a year if you're over 50 years of age, and your adjusted gross income is less than 120. No, actually, I think this year it's like 132,000 single, mm-hmm. and 204,000 married. So whatever you are you married or single?
No, I'm not married. No.
Okay, so you're single. So you'd have to fall under the 130 some thousand single adjusted gross income. If your adjusted gross income is under 130 some thousand, and you had wage income or earned income from a business, you can put $7,000 into a Roth IRA. Also, if you work for a business that has a 401k, or if your company and you create a 401k with a Roth option in it, that Roth option will allow you to put in $27,000 to the Roth account every year. So there's lots of ways to get money in there, but you can also convert IRAs into Roth called Roth conversions, but you have to be very careful that you only do it when the tax advantages are in your favor. In other words, if you convert and you convert into the 35% tax bracket, but you're typically only in the 22% tax bracket, you hurt yourself more than you helped yourself. You need to keep the tax bracket down. So if you're into 22, I might flow up into the 24% tax bracket, but I really wouldn't want to go any more, push my bracket above that.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay.
So you have to think it out. There's lots of ways to get money into Roth, and as I wrote an article, it's on our website, everyone needs a Roth strategy. Make sure you have a great Roth strategy, my friend.
Very good. Thank you, Drew.
All right. You take care. Great call.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll get started here with Richard. Richard, in Baltimore, you have a question about Amazon.
Yes. Hey, I called you guys a couple of weeks ago about my Amazon holdings, which was then $1 million, but now it's down to $750. But I'm not calling about that. I saw some rumblings, and I'm still holding it, don't worry. I saw some rumblings in the paper about some enlightened members of our U.S. Congress want to maybe dismember Amazon, saying it's just too big, it's unfair, it's not the little guys being driven out of business, blah, blah, blah. It's something, I guess, similar to what they did to the phone company some years back. What are the odds you think of them ever cutting Amazon up into smaller pieces legally?
That's a great question, and I wished I had a good answer for you, you know, because politicians, I always say politicians are nothing but noise. Now, you got to keep in mind, Richard, that Amazon is very different than AT&T or in the Bell Company. So if they break Amazon up, it could be actually a great thing for investors. Because the smaller a company becomes, and if you take the dynamic components of a company and you make them smaller, they actually expand even faster. And you actually saw that in some of the Baby Bell companies, but the
yes.
Baby Bells were so heavily regulated that you didn't get the dynamism as you could get with Amazon. So if they broke it up, it could actually prove to be an incredible benefit to you. So I really can't answer yep. what those buffoons are going to do in Washington, because that's really all they are, is they're nothing but noise.
Watch
they're,
them.
What's
watch,
that?
Watch to see if they start blocking them. They'll start blocking them from things well before they try to break them up. They'll block them from acquisitions.
Yeah, they could do that. But, you know, I think Amazon is just too dynamic a company with too much potential in the future. I don't know what it's going to do. I can't tell you Amazon's going to be a great investment, but Amazon's a great company, and I wouldn't be too worried about it, but I can't tell you for sure that it will be a great company.
Yeah. And
all right.
In the articles, one of the other people speaking against it said, well, it's going to be like maybe too big to fail or too big to mess with to begin with. So that might be where it's going to stay at, right there.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
all right.
We got to move on, but thank you very much. All the lines are open, 410-922-6680. We'll be right back with more Money, Riches, and Wealth.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., doing what a personal financial advisor should do. Is your personal financial advisor your tax expert? Is your financial advisor able to guide your estate plan? Is your financial advisor able to help with college planning, retirement planning, mortgages, Medicare, Social Security, company benefits, or as a comprehensive advisor to business owners? Is your financial advisor independent from brokerage firms or insurance companies? Is your financial advisor unable to take commissions or referral fees in direct conflict of their professional relationship with you? Is your advisor a fiduciary working in your best interest? Despite the commissions and fees you pay, you're unable to answer one question yes. Do our financial physical and experience the difference. We are so confident that the financial physical is unconditionally guaranteed. To learn more, call 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, this is Drew Tignanelli back with Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here with Michael P. McCarthy, and we're going to answer any listeners' questions, 410-922-6680. Do we have anybody online right now?
Not yet. So if you've been thinking, oh, I don't want to wait on hold, there is no hold right now if you call in, and we'd love to answer your question.
410-922-6680 if you want to call in. Your question could be on Social Security. It could be on Medicare. It could be on IRAs, 401ks, estate planning, income taxes. It could be on investments. It could be on insurances, auto, home, life, long-term care. Whatever the case may be, if you have a question, if it's dealing with your personal finances, we're here to answer that. 410-922-6680. You know, Mike.
Go ahead.
I was saying earlier this show that when you have a bear market, Roth conversions are something seriously you should be considering, because you think about it. Let's say I had a $100,000 IRA, and now it's only $80,000. Well, guess what? If I convert that, I only have to pay taxes on $80,000, not $100,000.
Yeah.
And if it does revert back to the 100,000, that next 20,000 is going tax-free in my Roth IRA. But I also have to do it in a way that I don't overpay income taxes on that money. So I need to have it done strategically and wisely and understand what the tax bracket, because remember, the benefit of a Roth conversion is always the tax bracket that you pay when you convert the money to a Roth IRA versus the tax bracket you would be in the year you intend to withdraw the money from the Roth IRA. And if you pay too high a tax bracket in the beginning, and in the future when you withdraw it, you're in a much lower tax bracket, you would have been better off staying in the traditional IRA. But if you have the same tax bracket or higher, then the Roth conversion would work tremendously to your benefit. So yeah, Now's the time to really be thinking about Roth conversions while the markets are down.
So another thing that, you know, might already be thought of, but I want to plug this out there. First off, if you haven't gone to financialconsult.com and gone to the, what's it called? I'm blanking.
The Education Center. Right.
If you haven't gone there, there's a ton of great material there. And one of the things that I just threw up there, or at least it should be up in the next day or two, we did a webinar the other day on calculating the ROI, return on investment, of a college degree. And we basically, you know, not saying that money is everything, but say, hey, when the college graduate's making these decisions, this might be one of the most important financial decisions of their lives. At the very least, they should understand the financial aspect of what they're deciding. So that's a good one up there. But we got some callers on the line, so let's get to answering some questions. Steve in Owings Mills, how can we help?
Yeah, I just want to be sure I do these QCDs right. It's I'm turning 72, so I'm going to be doing them now first time. My understanding, I have to make sure that money goes right from my account directly to the charity, first of all, right?
Not yes and no. So what we normally do is we have the money payable to the charity, but the check sent to you, and then you give it to the charity, and then you still need to get a receipt from the charity. I don't like the money going from the custodian direct to the charity because you could not get a receipt. I want you to get the check made payable to the charity, and then the charity know that they need to still give you a receipt. Am I making that clear?
No, it's great. Thank you. Thank you. Now, I'll change what I was planning to do. That's the first thing. Now, second thing is that when the charity makes a check out, no, when the custodian makes a check out to the charity, do they eventually? I'm going to get a statement from my custodian, right, about my distribution, my QCD somewhere.
This is a great point you're making. Sorry for cutting you off, but I just want to make sure we get this done quickly. So you're making a great point. At the end of the year, all they're going to do is send you a 1099-R and say, you took out $50,000 from your IRA. That's it. That's all they're going to tell you. They're not going to tell you that you gave $10,000 of it to your church or whatever the case may be, my friend. It's up to you to remember that you did a QCD, or to tell your tax preparer that, remember, Joe, I gave $10,000 to my church.
Uh-huh. Okay. Very good.
This is a great call. You're asking all the right questions, my friend. It's absolutely perfect.
All right. Thank you.
If I make 10 charitable checks out, I got to be sure I get a statement from each one of them.
You got to make sure you get a statement from each one of them, and you got to make sure that when you file your tax return, you tell whoever's doing them, or if you're doing them, that, remember, I did this much in QCDs, the rest is taxable. Very important. We review this every client that we do it for.
Limits 100,000 a year. Do I remember that?
100,000 a year per person. So if you're married, 200,000 from each of your 100,000 from each of your account. Okay.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks,
all
Steve.
All right, buddy. Great call.
All right, we got just a little bit of time left in the show. Let's try to go to Jim in Annapolis on Social Security. Jim, how can we help?
Hi. I turned 65 in July, and I don't plan to take any Social Security for a few years. I'm self-employed, and my wife works for the state of Maryland with excellent health benefits. Do I have to apply for any type of Medicare now, even though I don't plan on taking it?
So let me ask you a question, Jim. Before I'm going to answer your question, you have to answer my question. What day in July do you turn 65?
23rd.
You're older than I am. Because I turned 65 on July 31st. So,
I beat you by a week.
To my older brother, let me say, the answer to your question is no. You do not have to sign up for Medicare. I get this question so often. Clients call me up and say, I heard that I'm turning 65. I got to sign up for Medicare. I'm going to get penalized. The answer is no. If you've got medical insurance through a group healthcare company like your wife, which has more than 20 employees, and obviously the state of Maryland has more than 20 employees, then you do not need to sign up for Medicare when you turn 65, period. What you need to do, though, is you need to remember that when your wife retires also, and you're well beyond 65 years of age, you need to get an L-564 signed by the state of Maryland. And if she's older than 65 also, she needs to get one signed too, saying that you've had group health medical insurance from the state of Maryland, and therefore you get a special enrollment period into Medicare Part B and D when you do retire, even if you're 82 years of age. You get a special enrollment period into Medicare without penalty as long as you get that L-564 that says, boom, I was with Maryland Health Plan until this day.
Even if I start taking Social Security?
Even if you start taking Social Security, it's irrelevant. If your wife's health plan has a health savings account on it, you do not want to ever sign up for Medicare Part A, right? Which is sort of free. You paid for that since you were a kid, okay? Uh-huh. So if your wife does not have a high deductible health plan with a health savings account, you can go ahead and sign up for Medicare Part A when you turn 65 because it's no problem. You just don't want Medicare B where they're going to start charging you $170-some dollars a month.
Right. Okay.
And you don't want to sign up for Social Security until you really feel that you're ready to retire. Do not start Social Security too early.
Oh, right. Yeah. I get the statements every year, and it's just like, well, we both still have income, so why bother? Let it grow.
Yeah. Let it go. Let it grow, my friend. I got to go.
All right, Jim.
Great
question.
Excellent, my friend. Mikey, always a pleasure to be with you.
I'm the same with you.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.